every...
This edition of Satsang with G. Now that the sound from BBS has gone down a bit, I can push the volume up for people listening on YouTube. Welcome everyone on BBS Radio. It is so very, very nice to have you all here today. We're going to have a rather interesting time. So I want to invite all of you, every last one of you, to really let go of your day. Completely let go of everything that's happened so far today. Let go of everything that has bothered you or everything that has been wonderful. And you know, while we're at it, why don't you let the whole week go? Everything that's happened to you in the last week. Well, I forget. How about the last year? Or this year? Oh, let's just keep going. How about since the day you were born? Why don't we just let all of it slip away into absolutely no one and nowhere? So you're just here. The same thing about the future. You know, I mean, we're thinking, oh, am I going to have for dinner tonight? And oh, it's going to be a tough week next week. Or what am I missing? Or any of those kinds of things. And just let all those go too. And just be here. You've chosen to spend time for an hour just listening to me and listening to people who ask questions, or maybe even ask a question. So be here completely, totally. Don't let anything else intrude. The subject today is universal consciousness. And I chose that, well, first off, because it's true. And secondly, because lots of people have different ideas as to what that means. So when I say the word universal consciousness, actually the two words, universal consciousness, what do you experience? What's your idea of what that is? Do you think of other dimensions? Do you think of some super duper consciousness? You know, some altered state, some state of bliss or perfection, or where everything's happening just perfectly. Do you think of other layers of being, divine beings visiting and that sort of thing? What does it mean to you? Well, what I'd like to do is to show you that it's a whole lot more simple and a whole lot more present and direct than you ever imagined. That in fact, this universal consciousness is the thing that you have been mistaking for your consciousness. So as we started this, remember, we just sort of started to let go of the past, of everything that happened up to this moment. So you're just here. And then we let go of the future, what's going to happen next. And now let go of now. Notice how you don't have to maintain now. You don't have to try to be in the now. If you're doubting that, just try to not be in the now for a minute. It's the only place you can possibly be. So even though you don't let any kind of ideas and stuff of the past intrude, and any kind of ideas of the future intrude, also let go of any ideas you are holding about yourself right now. And just be here. Just totally here. And notice how effortless it actually is. Notice how simple. Notice that you don't need to do anything. You You're automatically here and now. Now, normally our minds are racing back and forth between stuff of the past, stuff we're going to do in the future, and if you do manage to make it into the here, the mind actually settles here for a second. It's got all sorts of ideas about what now is like and what it should be or what it used to be and, gosh, I wish it was better, or just put all of that aside and notice that you're just here. Now, in this space of just being here, I want to ask you a question. Are you aware of your own existence? I mean, if I say, do you exist? Is there anybody here who would say no? Right, because you'd have to be here to even say no, right? So you're not in any doubt whatsoever that you exist. And you're aware of existing, right? There's an awareness to everything that you've been experiencing. Ever. Always. You're not like a rock, right? Where it seems to have existence, but no awareness of it. You're very much aware that you exist. So, when I ask that question of do you exist and are you aware of existing, where do you go inside to answer that question? Where do you go within you to get an answer for that question? Now notice it's not like an object, right? This sense of existing is not like you didn't read it in a book, right? You're not referring to some reference you picked up somewhere along the line, or, you know, the words of some great teacher. It's very direct, immediate, and very intimate. It's right there. Consciousness of your own existence. What if I was to tell you that that is the universal consciousness? All ideas about multi-dimensions and other planes of existence. All of those appear in front of this, don't they? Every idea you have about the nature of reality and consciousness and truth and all of that is being perceived by exactly the same mechanism that is perceiving your simple existence, the simple fact that you're here. Now, I want to invite you to explore this a little bit with me and take my word for it, because we're so used to thinking, well, that's me, it's my body, I'm aware of that. And right? Just put all of that aside for now, because that's just a thought we have about the experience. All we know right at this point is that you are aware of your existence. Now, that awareness of your existence, looking at the same place that you look when I asked you the question in the first place, see if you can find a boundary on it. See if you can find somewhere where that awareness stops. A perimeter of some sort. And if you think you found a boundary, how do you know it's a boundary unless you can see that there's something beyond it? So really look. This might be very challenging because this is not the kind of question we normally get asked. This is not the kind of stuff that, they test you on in school. They don't review this with you on job applications. They say, oh, yeah, you've done a lot of really great stuff, but who are you really? And is there a boundary to consciousness? I've never gotten that in a job interview. But that's why you're here. That's why you're sitting in satsang and not just, not at a job interview. Can you find any boundary or limit to it through your own direct looking? And you've heard people talk about infinite consciousness, and I even started the show and called this show universal consciousness, but that's just a word. Look for yourself. Is there any limit? Spatially, let me know if you can find one. People are saying, no, don't find one, can't find one. And that's very true. I wasn't able to. If somebody finds it, please let me know. I want to explore it. So far, I've not met anybody who could. I've met no one who could find that boundary. Okay, now, see if you can find that space. We took care of space. See if you can find a beginning to it through your direct experience. We have thoughts about it. Oh, it started with my body. It started when I was born. It's going to end when I die and all that. Those are all thoughts about it. Look right now yourself. Look at this awareness that you are fully and naturally aware of effortlessly. You don't have to do anything to get it. It's just there. Does it have a beginning? And if you find a beginning, you have to be aware of what was before it so you could mark the beginning. So if you think you found one, check that out. Did you really find it suddenly appearing? Out of nowhere. You know, we can use the example of space-time. As far as, you know, physics is concerned, you think about, you know, it goes as big as the universe. Is there a place in space where you can go up and find the end, where there really is nothing on the other side? Can you even conceive of such a thing? Can you conceive of no time at all? I don't mean just the physical times range you're starting from the Big Bang, but nothing. Just everything's gone. We don't normally think in those terms. We don't normally question that. But now apply that to your sense of being aware and see if you can find a beginning to it. Now, if there's no beginning to it, is there an end? Can we turn around, face the other direction, and see? Oh yeah, it never started, but it's going to end over there. Same rule, it's just a different boundary. See if you can find that place where it stops. Again, so far, nobody has. Okay, so this awareness. The one that you're looking at right now, your awareness, doesn't have a boundary, doesn't have a beginning, doesn't have an end. So if it has no boundaries whatsoever, how many of them are there? I mean, there's several people watching this now and listening to this. Are you all having different experiences about it? If I was to ask, okay, well, what are you experiencing? What are you experiencing? I mean, if I had you write down that experience of looking for it, everybody would write down exactly the same thing. If I asked you about some event in your life when you were 10 years old, I'd get as many different answers as there are people here. But this, how many different kinds of experiencing of awareness can there be? Again, confirm this for yourself. Could there possibly be more than one of them? Well, that would only mean, that could only possibly mean, that that is the universal consciousness. There's no beginning, no end. It occupies all space and time. There's no boundaries, no limits. Now, how close is it to you? The awareness that is looking for the boundary, is that not awareness? Is there something else, a different one? We already determined there's only one of them. So is there another one that's actually looking and searching for the boundary? Or is it awareness itself, looking for its own boundaries and not finding them? So who is the universal consciousness then? This all-pervading, all-seeing, all-knowing, all-present. Could it be anything other than you? It's got to be you. And people have been spending thousands of years looking for this, you know, the ultimate, the grand pazuti, you know, the universal consciousness, that which is beyond all, the one and only God or the true self. And there it is. It's you. It's the one doing the looking. Because only awareness is aware. And there's only one of them. You are the universal consciousness. Now, is that bringing a smile to anybody's face? Have any lights gone off about that? Because it is deeply, deeply significant. Don't you think? I mean, isn't this kind of what people have been looking for? Getting comments here. But we are the awareness. Yes, exactly so. But I wanted to show you that to you because if you don't see it for yourself, it's just an idea, you know? But is anything I showed you an idea? Is it just a nice idea that you had? You know, did I put you into a trance? You know, leave a post-hypnotic suggestion that you send me all your money? Was this imaginary? Or was this your direct experience? Somebody leaves the comments. I'm always here. It angers me when Neo-Advaita teachers proclaim there is no doer. Yeah. Same guy. I emptied the cat box because my daughter didn't want to. She's grateful for my actions. Well, I'm very glad. So I could even ask you. Well, who emptied the cat box? I mean, didn't that entire thing happen within the realm of awareness? But I'm trying to point out to you is that you're never not that. It's not like you become this person, this limited being, and then you go back, discover the true self. This is who you have been the whole time. You've never been anything other than this. We've had lots of ideas about who we were. The first one, the original one, the one that has really caused all the problems, is the idea that I am the body, which is taught to us all from we're children. That belief that I am the body and not consciousness that is aware of a body literally takes consciousness, makes consciousness believe that it has been compressed within a form and therefore doesn't have access to all of this. And so we have to go through little exercises and explorations like this to discover it's simply not true. The I am the body thought, that's what's meant in the story of Adam and Eve when they ate of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. It's I am the body. That's it. The moment I am this body means you're a different body. I and you come into being, as does a universe, as this and that, and up and down, and right and wrong, and good and evil. They all come into being when you identify, you, universal consciousness, identify yourself as a person, as a finite self. And from that perception arises the idea that you are somebody other than who you actually are. This is who you are. Anybody enjoying that? I'll be quiet now because no one can ever show me my truth. I love listening to you. Oh, thank you. Yes, you're right. Can't show it to you because you're it. All I can do is invite you to look without your thoughts about it, to look without your beliefs about it. I mean, we've all been indoctrinated to think I'm the body. Right? And so I think of myself and therefore experience myself as this limited, finite form that was born at a certain time, you know, grew up, did all of these things, had all these experiences, traumas and difficulties and problems, and then died. That is who we think we are. And then, depending on your belief system, another body will appear, and then I'll be that, and I'll identify with that, and the cycle just keeps on going. You've never been any of them. You've always been consciousness that is aware of them. No boundaries, can't find a limit, it just goes and goes and goes. Yes. Yes. Isn't that amazing? I mean, really, isn't that amazing? And I'm not making it up. This isn't a teaching. I'm not teaching you about who you are. I'm inviting you to take a long, honest look at yourself. Yourself. That universal consciousness is yourself. That's the true I. That is also what was referred to in the Bible, Moses, the experience Moses had on Mount Horeb. I am that I am. I am that I am. Not this I am. Not this little petty thing running around struggling. I am that I am, the universal consciousness. That was the revelation. Ramana Maharshi said that was one of the greatest writings in religious history. I am that I am. The sense of being is the ultimate. There aren't other dimensions and, you know, special beings and all sorts of layers, and none of that happens without consciousness, does it? Without consciousness, you couldn't have any of those, however elaborate and beautiful and intricate and interesting they are. They all appear in the same place, to the same thing. You are knowing them, are you not? So you're prior to any bit of information, however beautiful, however spiritual, however powerful, however useful it might be, you are prior to it. I mean, before you can even say, I am, you have to be. So even the thought and word and feeling of existing happens secondarily to the fact of who you are. Somebody said on Facebook, the awareness of this is a process, especially having a lifetime of evangelical Christian upbringing. Yes. Yes. You need to come back to this place. Because the habits of our minds, excuse me, the habit of the mind. Remember, the mind is nothing other than all the thoughts about ourselves that we have identified with. That's what the ego is. Its ego is just a subset of thoughts. And those subset is the thoughts I have about me, the image I hold of myself. And then that image is now, you know, you were taught that it was bad and sinful and horrible. You were never taught that that sense of being was God. You're not taught that. Christ taught it, as did others. But in an evangelical background, you are beaten into submission to be a miserable sinner and accept there's only one way to God. Well, how do you get to God who is everywhere? How do you get somewhere when it's already here? The answer is you can't. So where is this? In the mystical Christian tradition, they had that experience. Lord, thou art the love with which I love thee. A complete disappearance of that sense of self. Not an egoic sense that, oh, I'm the great I am God. That just goes, and there's nothing but the one, the universal consciousness. These are universal consciousness, pure awareness. These are words we use now that didn't appear that much in the Bible. They do in Sanskrit, and they do in Buddhism. But they don't. They don't in the Christian tradition. They should, but they don't. It's hard to tell because modern Christianity, as it was passed down to us, was a product. It was created basically in 325 AD by the Nicene Council that was put together by Constantine, Emperor Constantine. And the whole point of it was to have an indoctrination of people, because their empire was spread out so thin, they had to have some way of obedience, some way of getting people to be obedient to the rule without having to police everywhere. And it was a brilliant idea that they came up with. That's when the emperors, the Caesars, who used to be immortal, right, weren't anymore. Only Jesus was, the only begotten, the only one. And therefore, conformity to a certain set of rules was absolutely necessary. Otherwise, you're going to rot in hell forever. Very, very powerful. It worked. As a matter of fact, it worked so well that it survived, 1,200 years after the Roman Empire? 1,300 years? I think around 800. Between 600 and 800, the Roman Empire finally fell. So it survived for another 300 to 500 years. And the church, the Roman Catholic Church, Catholic simply means universal, continued for another 1,300 years. I mean, let's talk about digging in an idea. And the evangelicals simply don't understand that they actually criticize and condemn. They say the Catholics aren't going to heaven, but it's the same theology that they have now embodied. So come back to this place often. I mean, you can't really leave it except in your mind. Your mind thinks, oh, I'm something else. I'm somewhere else. But of course, can you be? Can you be anywhere other than right here where you are? And so we have to actually return to identifying ourselves as a person who comes and goes. rather than the universal consciousness, which is what you actually are. But even every sense, every thought you have, every idea, everything that appears to you, whether it be, you know, a really deep and significant emotional turmoil or trauma that comes up, or the deepest thought, the most persistent belief comes up, it's all being perceived by exactly the same thing. And then that thing identifies with the thoughts. Right? If there's no thought of you being anything other than that, no thought that appears could possibly take root. You are completely stripped of all the Velcro. Nothing is left. There's nothing for it to stick to. When I was a child, I felt that if I wasn't me looking through my eyes, I would be looking through somebody else's eyes. Does that make any sense? Absolutely it does. Yeah. Because it's the same consciousness that's looking through all eyes. And in some traditions, in some yogic traditions, you can learn how to do it. You can learn how to have a non-local experience of other people's experiences. It happens all the time. They call it being empathic, but it's just feeling others. It only appears to be empathic and I'm feeling others because you believe that there's another. There isn't another. So when you feel what's going on with somebody else, you're only feeling you. And you become so good at identifying that, that you're very sensitive to what's going on in the environment. You know, I teach people consciously how to do that when I'm teaching them to be a coach in inner reconciliation, because it's absolutely critical. It's how you actually become a healer, is to become sensitive enough and not be identified with what you're feeling. That puts you in that gives you access to the entire heart of humanity. Now but here's the only danger of that. And every spiritual teacher ever has warned about it. Do not seek this level of awareness and knowledge and insight in order that you can get these city powers. It's absolutely true that around great sages, miraculous events take place, but they never do anything to encourage someone to go after it. It's not a technique. It's simply consciousness awakening on its own. I mean, Christ would tell the people after he did something miraculous, he'd say, don't tell anybody. Please, don't tell anybody. Then what did they do? They went out and told everybody. So, as the boundaries go down, you're going to discover all sorts of amazing things begin to happen. But now you'll be able to interpret them correctly. You won't interpret them from the point of view that there's this, you know, little person having this extraordinary experience. You'll see that it's simply the nature of consciousness to be aware of itself. That's all it is, and that's all you are. And ain't that grand? Amy says, love hearing this wisdom. Ah, so do I, by the way. Don't think that this is some kind of personal possession of mine. A lot of people do. They teach her that they, you know, that resonates with them, and you know, they say things that move them, and their heart gets touched. Somehow that you think that, oh, they have something. No, it is universal wisdom. That which recognizes the truth of what I'm saying is the truth. What else could recognize the truth but the truth? A lie? So, you know, the truth in you, it's the namaste, right? The truth in you is recognizing the truth in me. That's all that's happening. And it is universal. Rita says, when letting go of the old thinking, how do you think the physical body is affected? Don't worry about it. Right? There's a whole lot as this begins to deepen where you begin to understand that your ideas about the physical body are not what the physical body is. And that kind of transformation brings about remarkable healings. But don't worry about it. Let yourself simply settle into this pure awareness that you are. Let your sense of I, the sense of your own self, begin to habitually turn back to the great I am to identify itself. Jesus, that's what Jesus meant when he said, I go unto my Father. And he said that these works that I do, you'll do also. And greater works than these you'll do because I go unto my Father. So forget about the works, forget about healing, forget about any of that stuff. That's the periphery. Just concern yourself with the I going back to the Father or the Mother, if you prefer, or just the I, great I am, or beingness or pure awareness, or the Godhead, or the prophet, however you perceive it. However you perceive it, it doesn't matter. The experience is the same. And it, as there's less of you and more of it, it will take over. It will heal what needs to be healed. It will adjust what needs to be adjusted. It will take care of what needs to be taken care of. It's governing the universe. It can take care of your life. Let's see. From Divinire, how come I feel the boundary to consciousness is infinite, but the boundary to myself extends only a few feet outside of my body? And I perceive everything outside of that invisible boundary is outside, because you're identified with the body. You just said it, right? Extends only a few inches outside of my body, the boundary to myself, right? So you're seeing yourself as outlined. Yeah, it's a little bit bigger now, or maybe it's even an aura. Maybe it's even a big aura that fills a room, but it's hardly infinite. Right? You're thinking of yourself as a piece of consciousness, or a bit of consciousness, or like an ice cube in the water. Right? The ice cube is water, okay? And as it becomes increasingly aware and just flowing into the water that surrounds it, the ice cube melts. And once that happens, can you identify the ice cube in the water? When the Mississippi River or the Nile or the Potomac or the Rio de Janeiro empties into the ocean, do they maintain their names? They're gone. They have been completely immersed in the one. So just notice that your mind is still very attached to you as a finite form, because that's all it's known. Your whole energy, your whole nervous system has been operating from the premise that you were that person, that you were that body. And so all of the habits and conditions and experiences and beliefs, they're all revolving around this. And they're not going to disappear like that, because suddenly you recognized, you have seen that the infinite has no boundaries, that consciousness doesn't have a limit. The feeling and the thoughts and the sensations associated with those limits are still going to be here. Right? This is where the rubber meets the road. This is where it does become a practice. Notice the insight itself is not a practice. It wasn't a practice. You just looked, and you didn't have to practice looking, right? Nobody had to tell you how, you look in a mirror and you go, how do I turn this on? How am I going to make this work? I mean, you don't have to. You just look, right? And there it is, right? But all of the old habits, all of the old momentum. This is the biggest discovery that I made, and it took me decades. I'm saving you decades here, okay? I'm saving you decades in a monastery. I'm saving you multiple lifetimes right now. It took me forever to grasp that, even though when I was 19 years old and I saw what I've been showing you, what showed it to me showed me very clearly that there was something else that had to be done. There, separating had to take place. And it took me a very long time to get to the bottom of it, for reasons I won't go into it now. It's a long story, but I think you can get the idea. So we have this idea, I've just seen myself. I know who I am. It's infinite. And suddenly that, the heavens are going to part and angels, and that's it. You're going to take it up to heaven, and that's the end of it. If that was the case, there'd be no sages walking the earth. There'd be nobody to teach us this stuff. If that was actually the case, right, they'd all disappear. There it is. Boom, gone. And what the hell would the rest of us do, right? But they're still here. The body's still functioning. The personal life is still functioning. The bodhisattva in Buddhism even even takes a vow to stay until all beings have been saved, till everyone has been delivered. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. So don't be at all surprised. And if there's anything I hear more than anything else in my classes, and especially when I'm teaching about non-duality like I am today, but my mind is really acting up and I got all these things are coming up, and why does it keep going? It just does. And the less you make a story out of it and just see it for what it is, a habitual pattern in the nervous system, and not you, having no essential identity of its own, having no real authority of its own, except the authority you give it, you begin to remove the authority from it. One of the things I teach in Inner Reconciliation, I start out with, I call it the yoga of allowing. And that's simply being with these feelings. You know, when an uncomfortable feeling or a memory comes up and you feel the shudder in your body, our instinct is to try to get away from it, or create a story about it, or reframe it, or do some kind of psychological processing on it. What I do is say, stay there, listen to it, put your attention on it. Don't make up a story, don't feed it, but don't run away, because that's the same thing. You know, you can't fight the mind. Mukti says, fighting the mind is like trying to fight the wind dressed as a kite. You can't do it. So you completely surrender to the moment, and you simply see. You recognize that what this is isn't you, but the programmed responses, the habitual patterns that are still very much alive in the nervous system. Rita says, I really needed to hear that. Yeah, I did too. We are all bozos on this bus, my friends. Okay, so I hope that answered the questions. We have Rita on Facebook, and let's see if I got another one here. Let's see. Before our birth and after our death, we don't remember anything. Is it like we don't exist, but we do? If you look at it from the point of view of the human life, the human life does come and go. But how many deaths and births have you experienced? In the time it took me to say that sentence, a couple million cells within you died, and a couple new million got born. Have you changed? You see, if we try to answer that question from the point of view of the mind, we'll be stuck in time, right? Because the answer, was there anything there before you were born, is lost. There's no memory of it. Is there going to be something after you die? Well, nobody's come back to tell us about it, right? So you have to wait and find out. So, right? And then you're discovered or you won't. And if it's true, and it really is the end, then boom, it just lights out. The question will be gone too. So if we're going to answer an existential question like this, we need to do it from the point of view of what we are actually experiencing in this moment. What is my experience like? Every moment, you know, I mean, I'm on body number 10 or something ridiculous like that, right? The entire body turns over every 7 years. Are you different? The awareness of your life when you were 5, or when you were 20, or when you were 40, if you've gotten that far, or 60, if you've gotten that far. Was that awareness any different amongst any of those? It's always been the same. So I have loads of evidence that it was there before I was born, and it's going to be there after I die. And both of those are transient, temporary events of which I will be aware when they happen. That I'm not going anywhere. That it is just more of the stuff that appears and disappears. And these little births and these little deaths, they're going on all the time. I mean, you're not at all interested in or care about or drawn to or fascinated by anything now that you were at 10? Are you? Nothing. It's as if it's a completely different person standing there. Well, it is. Right? But the awareness of that person didn't change. Because if it did, you wouldn't be able to know you changed. Something completely changeless had to register the change. So you begin to answer that question from your direct experience. Look at the awareness itself, the thing that I pointed you at. Look at that. Now, if your mind engages on it, looking at it through time and space and all of that, there's no answer. You cannot come up with an answer. But look directly at the awareness of itself. What does it feel like to you? Does it feel like it started when you were born? Does it feel like it's going to die when this body goes? Intuitively feel into it. Your mind is useless here. Your mind has to have the context of space and time in order to make anything happen. So don't refer to it. It doesn't know. I'm inviting you to step into a completely different way of ascertaining what is truly true, what is really true. Let's see. How can you stay in that state of consciousness without the mind taking over, especially if you're going through a rough time? This is it's a good question. It's a very good question, and I always like to field the question. So first, look at the fundamental flaw in your question. How do I stay in that consciousness? Right? So how did you get out of it? What you're talking about is your focus of attention, not consciousness. Because if you're out of the consciousness, there's nothing. Right? But the things that are happening in your life, consciousness is aware of them. Even the rough times, the roughest of times, the deepest disappointments and griefs are experienced by consciousness. You're never not that. But if we identify with the finite self, with a limited sense of ourselves, we will feel as if the destiny of the body, if this grief that we're feeling, is actually the grief of consciousness. And it's not. It is simply the experience of grief or disillusionment or disappointment or a hard time or lack. Look for yourself to this consciousness. Is there any lack in it? Is there anything missing? Look for yourself. It is the mind that invites you to, first it says, oh, I'm out of that consciousness now. That's a thought, right? A thought appearing to the consciousness. So are you out of it? Then it says, oh, but how do I maintain it? How do I get back into it? This is the life of the spiritual seeker, and it's a phase we all have to go through. Right? How do I get back into that? I've had the enlightenment experience now. How do I get back to it? Question the truthfulness of that I. Is that I the true I am? Is God asking himself, oh, God, I lost track of me. Where am I? Praise me. I mean, really, when you really put your attention on it, you realize that the idea itself has no merit. And now it simply becomes a matter of discerning the experience that we're having. Isn't you. It is simply the conditioning of the nervous system. So it's not you. Thinking that all of these patterns of response and everything are you, that you are this person, is the source of all the mischief. It is just a pattern upon which we have projected a sense of self. Who's projected the sense of self on it? The awareness. Who else? And somebody made the comment before about the new Advaita teachers saying that there's no doer. It's a half-truth. The doer is not the person. Matter of fact, if you took this body apart, you couldn't find the person. The belief in a person, a being, an entity inhabiting this body, is like looking inside the radio to find the singers. They're not there. Matter of fact, when they first started doing cutting open cadavers, I think in the mid-1800s, for medical research, they were looking for the soul. They were looking for the self. You can't find it because it isn't there. I think I mentioned that the guy who actually mapped the brain, when anesthesia got to the point where they could actually remove a skull, the skull bone, and operate on the brain while the person was totally awake. What the guy did is he actually did some studies using an electrical probe, and he got to the point where he had mapped the entire brain. This part of the brain you stimulate here, his arm will go up, you know, his leg will go up, he'll laugh, he'll cry. I mean, everything. He could make any event in the body happen, except he could not make the person want to do it. There was an awareness that the body was just doing it. To his credit, this particular neuroscience came to the what I consider to be an inevitable conclusion. He said, the mind, consciousness, is not in the body. Now, this is completely outside of our wheelhouse because we're looking for consciousness to be a thing, right? It's not a thing. You can't have a thing that's infinite. There can't be a thing in infinite space. It is a non-thing. It's actually outside of space and time. It's not a thing at all. You are not a thing. The body's a thing. Events going on are things. Thoughts are things. Thoughts are little objects. Buzzing around whoosh, whoosh, very quickly. But you are not. This is just the habitual belief that I am the body, and you are not the body. Somebody coming back to that, watch your mind, watch your thoughts. Somebody else said, amazing. I totally agree. It is amazing. Right? We have all been laboring painfully under the notion that we are the body. And therefore the body's destiny, the body's experience, are my experiences. I'm going to die. I'm going to be disappointed. I'm going to be hurt. I'm going to go without. That is the I that believes itself to be the body. And that too is nothing but an image being seen in the great infinite eye of consciousness. The universal consciousness, which is what you are. Not going to be, not coming and going from. It doesn't come and go. You don't come and go. Even when we would say, I have the feeling, oh, I feel like I lost it. Okay. Who noticed that it was lost? Who noticed that thought? Oh, I lost it. And all the feelings that go with it. Can you lose it? I mean, if you lost consciousness, there would be absolutely nothing. But consciousness can't be lost, remember? We already probed it. It's everywhere, throughout all space and time. It has no beginning, no end, no boundaries. And it's you. Because if it's everywhere, it's right where you think this person is, this form is, this entity is. There's only the thought of it and not a real thing. That's what Buddha meant when he said it neither exists nor doesn't exist. I neither exist nor do not exist. Very mystical, very crazy. People don't get that. He's referring to that it doesn't exist as an entity. It only exists as a thought. So it exists, and yet it doesn't exist. It's like a unicorn, right? We can talk about a unicorn in great detail, or Mickey Mouse. Right? We can talk about Mickey Mouse in great detail. Everybody knows the story. Mickey Mouse doesn't exist except as a thought. As a thought, it's interesting. It's useful. As a thought, you are interesting and useful. All the different things that are different for everybody. And, you know, people are, there's, you know, there's a uniqueness that is consciousness aware of itself. Consciousness, awareness is self-awareness, is the universe and everything in it. It is simply God pondering herself. That is the nature of what we would call human existence. It isn't an independent existence seeking God. It is God viewing herself. Running low on time, and just make one quick more pass here on very good. Okay, so we are out of time for this week. This was wonderful. Please leave your comments even after on YouTube, and then even after this is ended, please share it. This is the level of discussion and conversation I want to see become mainstream, because this is where you really find your heart, your soul, and your true being. And like every bodhisattva, I want everybody to share it. Until next week, love you all. Namaste.